There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1113, Mandy Woodruff Santos, executive producer and co-host of the Brown Ambition podcast.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
I finally was able to get back to work. And yeah, the world ended like 2 weeks after I got back. I think I went back at the end of February, and then it was kind of funny, jokey, water cooler talk. Oh, you heard about this COVID-19 situation? And next thing I know, I'm right back at home, except it's maternity leave with a full-time job.
What's it like for new moms going back to work after having a baby, but not really going back to work because you're still at home? Oh, and by the way, your baby's still there too. Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. One of my good friends, Mandy Woodruff, joins me today. She is the executive producer and co-host of the Brown Ambition podcast. I know a lot of us here are friends of that show. We are fans of that show, co-hosted by the budgetista Tiffany Alice. In addition to running that show with her friend Tiffany, Mandy is also senior content director for LendingTree.com. It's an online marketplace where you can shop and compare everything from mortgages to personal loans. She's got more than a decade's worth of experience as a personal finance editor and reporter. And we go back, Mandy and I, we crossed paths at Yahoo Finance, where I was hosting Financially Fit and she was writing personal finance content. We hit it off real well, as two ambitious ladies would. And I wanted to bring her on the show today, one, to just catch up with my good friend, but also because I think she has some great wisdom to share to listeners around how to time manage, be productive, and think about work as a mom in this era of COVID-19. If you're working from home and overwhelmed and not sure how to make it all work, Mandy's there with you. She recorded this podcast from the basement while her 10-month-old took over the upstairs house. Very excited to bring the very real and raw conversation that I had with Mandy Woodruff. Here we go. Mandy Woodruff, my good friend, welcome back to So Money. How are you?
Oh, Lord, what a loaded question. Why did you start with the most?
Where are you, by the way? I think you're in a basement somewhere.
I'm in a basement. Can you hear any banging? Because I do have, I don't know if I can technically call him a toddler yet, but I have a very loud 10-month-old.
He's walking now, right?
He can. I think he can, but he hasn't realized it yet.
Yeah.
But he can certainly crawl and climb and knock a bunch of crap down. So you might hear a little bit of destruction in the background.
No worries. My son might burst in at any point and give me some financial advice, as he's known to do on the podcast. Mandy, it's so good to hear your voice. everyone in the audience, Mandy and I go back, way back to our days at Yahoo Finance. And a lot of you discovered me for the first time at Yahoo Finance. I'm sure your audience as well, Mandy. But Mandy and I were both financial journalists at Yahoo Finance. And we were both kind of at these points in our lives. It was great to know one another, I think, at the points that we did, because, you know, it's pivotal times in your late 20s, early 30s. You're still figuring things out. And you were on the show, So Money, 5 years ago. This is before you got married, before you became a mom, before there was a recession and a pandemic. So fill me in and fill us all in to kind of catch us up how life has shifted for you. And to bring this all back to money, one money lesson you've learned over the years as your plate's gotten fuller.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Oh, that's so much. Well, first of all, when I met you back at Yahoo, it was like you were on your way. You were moving on from Yahoo. I was coming in. I was very green. For me, Yahoo Finance was a huge career move. It was the time that I recognized I was a 2009 graduate from college, and I lost my first job after I moved to New York City, and I ended up working, you know, kind of scrappy, had to be very scrappy to get my first reporting job doing something that I actually wanted to do, and finally found a gig covering personal finance at Business Insider. And for me at that time, you know, I think for a lot of people who graduated in 09, you might have ended up taking a job you may not have wanted, or you took a job you did want, in my case, but you weren't paid probably what you would have been paid had it not been an insane recession, right? And for me, I'd spent a couple of years at BI, and I kind of had this epiphany, like, I've asked for a raise, I've asked for equity, they've said no. If I need, and I realized I need to make up for lost time, like I'm behind where I want to be in my earnings. So for me, it was about pivoting and looking for another opportunity so I could increase my income. So that was my move to Yahoo, which helped me get a big fat raise, but then also put me in a position, I think, for everything that came after. So at the time, I was just really excited to be able to grow and move. And I remember looking at you, Noosh, and being like, yeah, that's, I would love to. At the time, it just felt like you had been in the business for a long time. You had it all figured out. You had your video series, and you also launched your podcast, So Money, right before we launched Brown Ambition. So it always felt like mm-hmm. Noosh was a few steps ahead. And I was so just, you know, it was a pleasure to just ride your coattails like indirectly.
You hear that, everybody? She calls me Noosh, which proves we are tight.
I just started to call you that because I love it. I don't know if I have the privilege.
And that she just knew that that is the nickname that my family uses for me and my close friends. So you got married. You have since moved on from Yahoo Finance. You host, as you mentioned, the Brown Ambition podcast. You have a big job as the senior content director for LendingTree.com, which has been around for a very long time. It's sort of the go-to marketplace to shop and compare everything from mortgages to personal loans. And you're married, you're a mom. What's the number one thing about money that you've learned, or that you have reaffirmed perhaps over the last 5 years?
Yeah, I was rambling, but I was going to get there. I think what I'm getting at is, and I will bring it back to, you know, watching you, Farnoosh, you know, how you sort of approached your career and how multifaceted it's been and how you diversified your income streams, you know, podcasts, and you still, you know, do a lot of stuff with content and different brands and all of that. And I think the number one thing I learned for me financially and also career-wise was that it doesn't have to just be one thing. And I very much thrive when I have a couple of things, you know, on the going at once. I like to feel like I've got more than one trick up my sleeve. So while I have a job that I love managing content for LendingTree, I still have my podcast, and I'm working on a YouTube series too that'll be about investing and wealth building. And for me, it just feels good. And I found that it also, you know, and on top of bringing in, like, giving me the opportunity to bring in additional income by having these, you know, projects on the side, I also feel like it keeps me sharp and it keeps me free to, like, do other things when I want to do them and not have my entire identity aligned with a specific brand or company. And I definitely think my time at Yahoo was important because I very much felt like people wanted me to just do one thing, which was to write. And I wanted to produce videos and I wanted to try a podcast. And they were like, yeah, no, we're not going to let you do a podcast. But then as soon as I realized I could just do it my damn self, things got much better.
You know, I pitched this idea of this podcast, although I pitched it as a video series to Yahoo. I was like, what if we talk to, you know, well-known people about money, people that don't normally discuss their finances because they're, you know, athletes or they're artists. And they're like, just focus on what we're, they're like, that's cute. That's a good idea.
Not to like dump on Yahoo, but I mean, it definitely wasn't the place for an entrepreneurial, you know, person to thrive, I feel like.
Right. But then now at LendingTree, that's generous of them. It is unusual for an employer to promote or to encourage employees to have external activities. I think the fear sometimes as the employer is that you're going to leave, which, to be honest, happens, you know, because you realize like this thing over here that you're doing on the side is growing and taking on a new life and you want to pursue that. How do you negotiate that at work?
Well, I didn't ask for permission. That was the first step. Well, I mean, the podcast has always been my thing. I owned it and I'm sure you feel the same way. Thank God we didn't, you know, launch it with a brand that would have owned all the intellectual property and would have owned the trademark and would have owned the content itself. I think a lot about one of my favorite shows, Another Round, which was a really popular podcast launched by BuzzFeed. And I mean, they blew up. They interviewed Hillary Rodham Clinton. They were big. And BuzzFeed, they decided to shut it down and they couldn't do anything, those two co-hosts. And anyhow, so ownership's really important to me. And when you own it yourself, as long as there's not like a true conflict, you know, it's not like I'm on my podcast talking about like different lenders all the time. I also think, you know, especially as someone who hires lots of people and has a team, I care a lot about people thriving and doing what they need to feel happy. And I think if you're a very secure and as a leader, then you wouldn't be threatened by, you know, someone on your team having an extracurricular if it makes them happy and makes them more, you know, motivated to come to work each day. And certainly for me, autonomy and, you know, as long as I'm doing a good job, if I'm doing, you know, things in my free time that, you know, also have, you know, have synergy with what I'm doing during my day job, that's all beautiful. But yeah, as far as like how to like navigate that, especially if you're someone in the finance world and you want to launch a podcast or, you know, be it a YouTube channel or whatever. And I would say if the topics are very similar to what you cover, you know, during your day job, you might want to at least let HR know and give them a heads up. I think that is the professional way to do it.
Cover your bases.
Yeah.
I want to dive into Brown Ambition podcast, which you co-host with Tiffany Alice, who is also known as the Budgetnista. But ahead of that, as a new mom, you mentioned your son is just 10 months old. I'm just curious I find it interesting that you become a mom and your work does not slow down. You're taking on a lot of more responsibility. What has motherhood taught you about how to be more efficient with work? There are a lot of people who don't think that motherhood unlocks your ability to supercharge your career. In fact, they think it's the opposite. There's evidence of that, right? So what's you're bucking that myth and that trend. What's working?
I don't know that I intended for it to be this way, but I think I spent the year before I had my kid really just, I could not see past the day I gave birth. It was like a big black, I even went into therapy and I was like, I just don't know what, it just looks like a big black void to me. Like, what is life after this child comes? And, you know, after I finally had my baby, it was the winter, it was flu season already, even before it became, you know, COVID times, I was already like hyper anxious about, you know, the baby getting sick and I was isolating myself. And I just really hated maternity leave, y'all. I just did not enjoy it. It was hard. It was hard to, what was hard for me was that feeling of not being productive, quote unquote. And for me, I just didn't realize how much of my identity was tied up in producing work and being, bringing value to a team and all that. And I found I really missed it. And I finally was able to get back to work. And yeah, the world ended like 2 weeks after I got back. I think I went back at the end of February, and then it was kind of funny, jokey, water cooler talk. Oh, you heard about this COVID-19 situation? And next thing I know, I'm right back at home, except it's maternity leave with a full-time job, essentially. And I don't know, I felt like I was so excited to get back to work. And I was also, I feel like the pandemic put everyone on the same playing field. And I can definitely see how a new mom goes back and she feels like she's missed something. You know, there's been changes in operations or duties have been shifted, and you feel like, you know, you have to get caught back up. But the pandemic threw everyone on their asses and we were all trying to figure it out. Nothing was the same for anybody. And I really love that challenge to come back and sink my teeth into, okay, how do I, you know, transition my team to fully remote working? You know, what kind of, and we're also, we write personal finance content, and there's people's personal finances were almost,
it's everything right now, that content, yes. Money,
people want and need that kind of information. So there was a real sense of duty. Like I felt, okay, mm-hmm. This is my job to help people get educated. What a privilege we get to come to work, and hey, we still have jobs. So I've just really tried to focus on the positives, and I don't know if it's the motherhood or the pandemic or what, but I feel this huge surge of energy.
Like a calling.
Yeah. Like a calling. And I don't want to sugarcoat it. Like, I mean, I dealt with lots of postpartum.
I mean, you're
anxiety.
In a basement right now recording. Let's remember.
Yeah. It's been hard as hell. I really had to learn how to ask for help. I mean, I have been editing our podcast since day one through maternity leave, through, you know, I don't even think we finally hired our editor until after the pandemic hit. So it took a pandemic and a baby for me to finally be like, yeah, maybe someone else can edit the show. Okay. and from there, you know, just kind of learning, you know, how to ask for more help. Yeah, it's been really freaking hard, but I just have this sense of optimism, which is so weird. And I'm sure people are like, what do you mean the world's on fire? But I choose optimism. I really do.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. You know, speaking of optimism, the summer was a season of mixed emotions for everybody. And I'm sure you, as a woman of color, to watch the news and to see this reigniting of the Black Lives Matter movement, Mm-hmm. What, when you were on your show, Brown Ambition podcast, when you were deciding on topics and discussions, what were the reactions to everything you were experiencing and seeing? So that's the first question. What was sort of the takeaways that you were discussing on the show mainly? And the second part of that question is, where do you think the intersection is when it comes to personal finance and race and politics? Because, you know, I'm sure you've heard that there's some people in our community that feel like it's important to keep those two topics separate. That you know, you don't want to alienate people by talking about politics or race when you're talking about money. I have a different opinion on that. So we'll save that question for later. But first, what were some of the reactions that you and guests were having on Brown Ambition podcast this summer?
Yeah, I mean, so much of Brown Ambition, we do have some guests, but mostly Tiffany and I are chatting about what's happening in the world. And I remember, you know, after George Floyd's passing and then the resurgence of news around Breonna Taylor, even though I believe Breonna Taylor was murdered prior to George Floyd, her story took on a new life after his murder. And I remember Tiffany and I just sitting on the air, just listening to the static. And especially Tiffany, we vented. We talked about our feelings because it felt fake to not talk about it. You know, our show is called Brown Ambition, and I remember when we first launched it, there were naysayers who said we'd be alienating our audience, and like, why do you want to create a show that automatically would, you know, based on, you know, someone could look at the title who's not brown and think it's not for them. And I don't think I had the words at the time, but I was like, why wouldn't we acknowledge the beauty and the power of Brown Ambition? We are Black and Brown women, Tiffany women. Tiffany was, you know, her parents are immigrants from Nigeria. My dad is Black. I'm from a multiracial family. Like we, in our race, I think we both acknowledged we didn't have the privilege of separating our race from our journeys in finance and our careers. Like we just didn't. So for us, the show and naming it Brown Ambition was really an acknowledgement of the special kind of ambition that you have to have by virtue of your race in this country. And I certainly think this summer, although we struggled to take our, there's just no taking your emotions out of it. It was a really, and it continues to be an agonizing summer and into fall now of the lack of justice for these Black people who've been murdered. What I like to think of though, and sort of how we grounded ourselves, you know, over the summer with all this news coming out and the rise of social unrest and protest, is that people seem to really be interested in hearing from us and what we had to say. And people came to our show. We got lots of new listeners who weren't Black and Brown. Mm-hmm. And it felt like, oh, you know, there had been this unwritten rule. It seemed that talking about race and finance, like people didn't really have an appetite for it. It made them uncomfortable. And I think that's because it's uncomfortable to think that your own, as a non person of color, that your wealth and your success might have something to do, like it might not have to do with something that you've done. It might have to do in part with the privileges you've been granted by your skin tone. And people are uncomfortable. Like they don't want to recognize, oh, yeah, hey, maybe I got a little lucky in the lottery of, you know, skin tones here. But there's now a willingness to hear. And Tiffany and I were like, let's take advantage of this. We're going to talk about all day, every day, how race impacts financial success. And while people are willing to listen to it, and there's a acceptance of it.
I think some of the discomfort when you hear about people who have privilege and have achieved financial success, let's acknowledge that, you know, your white skin may have made it a little bit easier for you, or the fact that you had educated parents who taught you about money and you had a warm bed and food on the table every night. Like these seem to be things that we take for granted, but are instrumental in how we end up as adults in so many realms, but including our financial lives. And so I've lost listeners because I've decided that it's for me, it's not about politics or taking sides. It's about sharing more of the truth, mm-hmm. right? So there's a story, and then there's the bigger story, and there's the closer story. And I think that's where we're getting at, you know, where previously maybe I would let a guest come on and say, you know, well, I just worked hard and pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and I would just go on to the next question. Well, now we're not going to the next question. I want to know more specifics. I just had a guest on the show recently who is the host of Popcorn Finance.
Chris.
And he said something sort of like in passing, but it completely woke me up, where we were talking about how, you know, a lot of people are moving in this pandemic for various reasons. And I asked if his family had considered leaving Los Angeles because, you know, they've got the pandemic, but they've also, at the time, they had the fires. He was like, you know, that's an interesting question. My wife and I have discussed it, but for us, it's not so simple to just pick up and leave and go somewhere where we think might be a little bit more, you know, quote unquote, fun or exciting, because we're Black and we need to be doubly sure that where we're going, we're going to be welcome, that we're not going to be threatened, that, you know, we're going to feel safe. And that gave me goosebumps because I felt so ignorant at that point in time where I was like, you know, all this time we're talking about people moving and how where you live sometimes determines your ability to like retire early. And that's a privilege to just sort of be like, today I'm going to move to Denver, you know, because that's where the cost of living is lower than New York City. And there's so many considerations you have to make, and people of color have to make an additional consideration that white people don't always have to, which is, if I go here, will I feel safe?
Yeah. When you're not part of the mainstream, when you're not part of what the mainstream considers normal and the norm, it's scary. And especially, I think I share his perspective. You know, as a mom, I chose, we bought a house. A lot has happened, as you mentioned, married, bought a house, had a baby since the last time we spoke on the podcast anyway. And when we chose the neighborhood where we were going to buy a house, I really wanted to be sure that it was going to be in a ethnic, multiracial area where a little boy like mine, who's half Dominican, what is he? I can't even get the percentages right. He's half Dominican, a quarter white, a quarter Black, who knows what else is mixed in there from both of our backgrounds. And where someone with his name, Rio Francisco Santos, wouldn't be held back because he wouldn't be the only one. And we were very lucky to find this little pocket, our little neighborhood in the suburbs outside of Manhattan, where you don't typically think, I think it has there's a stigma attached to the suburbs where it's, you know, it tends to be wealthier and whiter. But we found this neighborhood that is like majority minority in the suburbs, amazing school district, and we could afford a house here. And, you know, it wasn't until this summer when it was Tiffany, actually, my podcast co-host, who was talking about, and I know she's been on your show and talked about it too, about how she had her home appraised in New Jersey where she lives, and it came in a lot lower than she expected. And then there was a viral story of a Black woman whose home appraisal came in very low until she took out all the, you know, Black memorabilia around the house, the you know, thing,
photographs
and portraits of artists and books by Black writers, things like that. And then she let her white husband be home for the appraiser, and how they had a crazy difference in appraisal values. And then I started to look at my neighborhood. You know, we bought this house from a Black couple, and I could tell because they didn't take down their photos. They didn't take down, you know, little winks. It felt like me, a little wink and a hug every time I looked in a room and I saw something that was like a beautiful Black family lived here. And to me, I was like, yes. But anyway, the values of homes in our neighborhood are way lower than other neighborhoods. And I'm looking at our neighborhood and I'm like, shit, like this is why we could afford a house, because this neighborhood's undervalued. Like, amazing school district, really nice homes, amazing people. And I'm starting to see even now how, you know, and I hope that this changes for the better, but the family who we bought this home from, I start thinking like, well, this was their nest egg. They were off to retire. They lived a great, you know, middle class life. They did everything right, got a home in this neighborhood 30 years ago. And it felt like, it really feels like this area is undervalued because it happens to be majority minority. I really hope that that changes, but I think about that now too. And I'm just like, okay, it's in my own backyard.
Yeah. A lot of deeper thinking going on. And so
question everything.
Yeah. And so as an editor, as a financial journalist, what do you think are the topics, questions, stories that going forward are going to matter a lot more than maybe they used to, or they're new, or they're being discovered, you know, because of the way that the world is shifting? What are you curious about these days?
Well, I think there's a lot of surveys. You know, our company, especially our content team, we love good research. We love to look at data and tell stories with that data about people's personal finances. And I didn't, you know, and I don't directly manage the team that creates those studies and surveys, but I'll pop into a brainstorm every now and then. And I was surprised recently that I had to be the one to say, hey, could we ask people what their race is so we can break this down by demographic, by race? They hadn't considered it. And I think, and I hope that people will, like, the discomfort around talking about race has kind of gone away. And I feel there's a real importance to, if you're in a position where you are going to try to tell the story of American households and how they are approaching their finances or how they're experiencing this reset, what are we calling it now? This depression, almost this pandemic, that we do look at how Black and Brown families are faring in relation to white families and white households. That to me is really, really important. Not just, you know, not just overall, how have people, you know, responded financially, but how has the impact been unequal, across demographics? And beyond that, I mean, my dad lost his job back in March. He was a bus driver for the city transit in Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm from, and he hasn't had a job since. And his unemployment check, my brother and I were just talking about it. His unemployment check is barely enough to cover his mortgage. And my brother and I are talking about, like, we're really worried about dad. And this stimulus check situation, you know, he got not even the stimulus check, that extra $600 the CARES Act had given to unemployed people that expired at the end of July. He doesn't have very much more savings to burn through. And I think if you're in the content world, continue to put pressure on and ask questions of elected officials to find out what they're doing about it. It's insane to me that nothing else has been done. That one stimulus package went out months and months ago, and people are really struggling.
I know.
And you,
it's so frustrating.
Isn't it frustrating when you hear people like say, oh, why didn't you have a rainy day fund? You know, why didn't you prepare better for
this? Our country doesn't have a rainy day fund. Right? Businesses don't have rainy day funds. Don't blame the hardworking bus drivers of America why they don't have rainy day funds. That's not the source of the problem. As a culture, we don't prioritize savings.
Yeah.
You know, and we're a country that's run on credit.
Yeah. We love debt. We love to, well, I mean, but like with the stimulus bill, it was insane to me. And there was $1 trillion, however much it cost. And it's just like, oh, we just found that money. Like, we're just going to do it. Okay, cool. So it sounds like we can just do whatever we want and make the money happen. So why can't we do it again to save people's like well-beings in the mental health toll, you know, everything, intersection of everything right now, mental health and race and finance and the economy, it's all connected. And like, there's so much anxiety happening in these households who just don't know. There's no certainty for them, you know, looking ahead. And I'm really passionate about that. And people need help. You know, we get questions to our podcast from people who are just like, what do I do? There's no money coming in. I'm barely making ends meet. Where can I go? And people are really in dire straits. And I really hope that we the people need to use our vote, use our voices, call your elected officials and demand help. Because this is, we have the power. We have the power, I think, to create change, but we have to keep our agency and keep our optimism that there can be change, or else nothing will get done.
Well, I'm going to end on that. Reminder to everybody to vote.
Please vote.
And please.
But keep voting, but not just November 3rd, but like every other little tiny election.
Every election.
Every election, mm-hmm. always vote, please.
It's your civic duty. And now more than ever, it counts like your life. Well, like your life depends on it. And not just your life, but your children's lives, your grandparents' lives. Thanks for that reminder, Mandy.
Anytime. Thanks for letting me rant about.
We need all the reminders and reinforcements. Absolutely. I so appreciate you. And I'll let you get back to your adorable family. Thanks for catching us up and for all the great, important work you're putting out in the world. And I'll see you on the other side of the election.
I'll see you. Thanks, Noosh, for having me.
Thanks so much to Mandy for joining me. Her podcast, again, is Brown Ambition Podcast, named one of the best financial podcasts of 2020 by Business Insider and nominated this year for a Plutus Award for the best podcast. All this information's on the So Money Podcast website, somoneypodcast.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at Farnoosh Tarabi. Hope you're off to a great week, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.